by those Baluchis or what they were. And then we sort of, Baba said there will be, you know, these robbers behind, almost each would frighten us a bit. There were these robbers, you know, those who would kidnap Europeans, especially, and everything. And it seems that Baba had taken the boy only, not because he wanted to have a boy as knight or something. He took it because he was one of those, of the family of these robbers. And somewhere we got stuck in a river bed, and then the convoy went on and we were for ourselves.
And you see, was driving then.
Yes. And then afterwards we came up, it was like in the Swiss mountains, rocks and everything. And those Baluchis looked so nice, they had white jackets with a cap on it, like the Swiss farmers had. And I was so happy to be in the mountains. But at that time, all our bedding was wet, because it rained. So when we got to that bungalow, not only the food had been bad, it was also chapati or something with dried chapati, a hard one with spring onions. But we were happy to be under a shelter.
Yeah,
yes.
And spring onions.
Yes. And then after when I said, well, I felt like being, let me go a little bit forward. He said, you don't dare to step one step out of the duck pond, you'll be kidnapped. So I really stayed in. But that was really, if you were not with Baba, you couldn't make such a tour at all.
And you know, Kitty was scared of the floor. She just went straight up to the Baluchi who had carried our luggage and blindly talking to him in Marathi. There were giants of people.
Oh, yes, they were nice looking. They were very nice.
But, oh, yes, yes, but there is an understanding that
they don't see Marathi.
Baba,
maybe that's how it is. So that boy, Baba, didn't really need him anymore after. It was just because he was a relation of it. So he probably made that he saw that Kitty was cooking. So then he said, I'm not eating the food of an infidel. And so he would have stuff, so he wished that he was just for the time when Baba wanted him.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to send him away. Do you remember this? Or
yeah.
Yes, and so he saw what the infidel is cooking and I should eat that food. So then he went. So then we didn't need him anymore. And in Quetta, when we finally arrived, we had a very nice bungalow, but there was not so much space. And there was a little well in the middle of the garden. And you know, Quetta is a sulfurous region. That's why they had an earthquake. So Kippy used to drink that water. And the disaster, you see what it has if you drink a lot of sulfur water. She was just running, you know, coming over to play ball, and she's all the time having gas with a wonderful scent. Oh, it's terrible. And if you lie on your mat, bedding on the floor, she would sort of sit near you and then, another one was there. You see, there were all these little things.
I think it is
not the sort of thing. I didn't want to say that. I think Rano and myself, I think it was Katie, I'm not sure. We were on that veranda with only wooden lattice work. But Rano was also. Yes. Because I know you put so many stuff. I remember Rano was doing that. We wrapped what we could, and you know, the pail of water that stood there, there was so much ice on it in the morning. And imagine sleeping on the floor, and we looked like, I don't know, like gypsies or something. We had everything, and I remember especially on the scarf here and the scarf there. Whatever we could find, we would put on, because we would freeze. And you said being used to warmer climate. But then what was lovely, all those people, caravans going from Afghanistan from Quetta to Kabul. And then also it was then spring with blossom like in Switzerland. But another thing, you remember in Ajmer, there is the water, it's full of mica,
yes.
The glimmer.
Yes. And fish died.
Yes, and then, you know, you get so thirsty, you can never quench yourself with that water. And that time we had potato diet. We are eating potatoes, almost not rice, because that doesn't make you so thirsty, but potatoes and potatoes in all different. That was the potato and the mica. So, I mean, the place where we lived was beautiful. But you know, but then you always have to have something so you don't get too,
too related
or something.
It might be that
father, you, I mean, that time you find a little bit rough, sort of, but actually, it's much better if you have this with father, but and then outside. And also, where, during the war, your father said once that we all represent, we are like the stage for the world. And he always used to say, put me sort of as a German. And at that, before the Hitler stuff, I was angry on the Germans. So he always said that, as if I was representing the Germans. Of course, he was just pulling my leg. But then also, when in Europe the butter was getting scarce, we were well looked after. Then suddenly we didn't get any more butter. And then afterwards, it was in that in Europe they didn't get butter. So Barbara was probably working with this group of Europeans. They represented each some part of Europe, probably.
Am I right in saying that Irene liked chutney very much, pickles or something?
Oh, yes, that kind of thing.
And you would eat like jams, and you were surprised as to how could you digest this thing.
Well,
I
can't eat this hot chutney. So sometimes I make mango chutney. If I get chutney, I make it home, not so spicy. Or I just put one mango and take plums and other things and say it's mango chutney. And every time Nuria says, oh, we like this your chutney, she has Indian recipes and she doesn't succeed. But I put dried raisins in it, I don't know, and it smells Indian afterwards. And you know, Mani, you used to send me, I have two still cooking books, Indian cooking books.
Yes.
Because I never cooked Indian food in India, but I've ate at different places. But then in Switzerland, you know, also those Indian students, I would help a little bit to feel more comfortable in Switzerland. I would cook Indian food for them. And you see, when they say, oh, we didn't know this, I said, well, it's from North India or from South India, or it's Muslim or Hindu or Parsi food. If it wasn't fine. But the people liked it. And what they liked most, mustard potatoes. But you see, so I used to cook and I used to like hot things. But now I can't because they scratch me and I get irritated and I get asthma. So now I tried that nice green chutney, which I like. So I tried, I wanted to have it here. But I took just this little bit. I took first a little. But you know, it gets so tempting, these nice things in the pilgrim center with the plain food. But I must restrain, so because I did too much that time. Now I'm not to eat any. But one thing I could tell, you know, I had Nuria said that she would give a farewell present. Have you heard this before? Nuria said she would give a farewell present to Arsenio and Julie because they're such wonderful Baba lovers. So I had told her in Spain in that village, is a self-made man, or he's otherwise a rich peasant with olive trees and almond trees and everything. But he has been painting from childhood, and he's been carving wood, and he's carving stone. So somebody there told me there is a very interesting man in the a family. So he's not quite my age, but elderly now. So they took me, and it's very rare that you are really taken into Spanish families inside. So he was very happy to show. He had made a big stone head of a Roman, of Christ, and of Buddha. And then I told Nuria that also he made out of olive wood. He made Christ hair holding his arm up. He made a bigger one and then a smaller, you know, like on the cross. It's done, you know, you could almost feel as if Christ would breathe. You know, this was so wonderfully cut. Then Nuria said, Irene, would you take, is it a problem if you take her on the side, this brick book, and you ask that man if he would not make a sculpture of olive wood from Baba. So, no, this is really interesting, you know, how Baba works. And, you know, Spanish are very Catholic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, if it's just the hazelnut season finished and the olive season begins, it will be only, not even a week between. So how can he make it in that time? And I was only for 1 month there. So a few days I couldn't reach him, so I went there. And I brought the book and said, who is this? Who is this? Then first, I was, not that I would not have stood up for Baba being avatar, but you have to be a little careful, because if the people are very Catholic, they get offended that you say somebody is even bigger than Christ, and that he has been Christ and all this. So I was very careful. I said, he's one of the biggest saints, and he has even visited Teresa of Avila. You know, it was just the day then when they were having a feast about her. And she was, Baba had been there, and she is also really a wonderful saint. And then I thought it over. I've never done something, and he was so interested. And one photo is the young man, Baba has the hair, which looks like Christ. So even children, when they looked at the book in my house, they said, oh, this is es Jesus, Jesus, the children. And he was so taken, he asked more and more, and I said him, and then he said, well, I think he's like Buddha. He didn't want to say like Christ, but he knew Buddha was God. And then he said, but he is God. And you see, with my Spanish, and with the hair and everything, so I could explain. But then his son-in-law had a good English, so he used to explain to him. And anyhow, he did it. And he said, come on,
to. Did he feel something what he was doing, Baba?
Let me tell you, he was really getting, he wanted to work himself into it. And with the photos I gave, there are two pencil drawings, but then he didn't get it quite, but he was wanting to feel Baba. And he thought that must be a wonderful person. And he made drawings first, and he made a plaster mask, which afterwards he gave as a present to Noah because she paid the wooden carving. So he was really trying to work himself into Baba, because you see, he had only flat photos to see. And we said he could choose which photo he liked. So he studied and he said, yes, this is. I said, look here, you must find. And he was so much in Rosio, he didn't do anything else anymore. And luckily the weather went bad, so he had time. And in this short time, you know, he had to work in this big time, he finished the head of olive wood. And if now you, it smells a bit of not from olive. Now then he said, you know, I'll give you the last moment. I can't part, this is my best friend. I can't part with him. He's, you see, and he did first the mouth, but, and he studied, and he wanted to feel, to get the feel of Baba. And that's the way you can look. And you know that it was just, it had to be. Now he said if you, it would be nice if he could have some Spanish things to read. And because I didn't want to tell, I only said, he's the greatest God, and he doesn't say Catholics or Protestants are bad or something, but this is a school, and he wants to teach people to love God and not to be mixed up with the dogmas and this from religion, but to really come nearer to God. And I mean, with that much Spanish, I could tell him that he would, he felt. And now, when I was still, before when he finished it, he was still beginning immediately another mask, you know, of clay from his own land. Only he could not burn it because he has not that 1,000 degrees of thing, but he would prepare it that it's not so, it's not breakable. And you know, it's so nice, and if you put it little up like this, you feel it's like Baba talking to you. Yes, yes. From it, and you see, he was the whole family on Sunday. The whole family came. They used to call me. I must come also to, and then they talk, and then they look at it, and then he wanted to have photos. I had to keep it, and they took photos. And then before that, he called a real photographer to take Baba's photo. And now he said, could I keep the book with me? I said, yes, you. I come again, and I also have a. Linot gave me a reproduction, you know, colored print from one of his Baba pictures. So I've had this frame, and I wanted to have this also. Of course, I've also photos, but I wanted to have Baba also to be in the flat in Spain. So I gave him this also. He said, oh, could I keep it till you come back next time? And now he's bought a piece of walnut tree, from a walnut tree, because it's very good, and he has, I must make a hat for myself. Whoa. You see now, and now the fine thing is that Arsenio is going to Mexico. And the day before he knew that he was going, Don Stevens told him or phoned him and said, look here, we thought the Spanish translation is ready. We thought we will have it printed in Mexico because there it's cheaper. And the next day, Arsenio was told that he's transferred to Mexico. So he's taking this, and he's also been helping Don to correct it. Because the man, the professor who had done it, died. And then it was, he didn't always get quite what Baba meant. But Arsenio, having a wonderful Spanish, and having also studied in Spanish and knows English, he helped Don Sims to do some corrections. And now he's going there, and he will look that this is printed. I said, one of the first prints you send me for this man. And the man said, I would also pay for that. I'd like to buy a book. And so now we have maybe the, you know, the seven realities, something we have in Spanish. So when I get back, Arsenio or Don will give me, and I will send it to him. Oh. And you see, it's really, and this is also again how Baba works. You see, any other culture who could have paid that much in Switzerland or more, I mean, it was not too much, but then it was, he put his heart in. That's what you have to do with Babaji, and he was just given the gift.
That's when I like it.
Yes. No, no, but I had to tell it because I think this is just as much Baba as when we are.
Yes, exactly.
And these things happen all the time. I mean, but how fun. Now, Arsenio is taking this because they said, oh, give something to children. But what's the good? The children are just as well as the Baba lovers. They are wonderful, you know, those little children. I hope they are soon big enough that they can come here. But so it's for them to have Baba's culture, Baba's head with them. And of a man who has done it with so much love.
Yes.
So I think I thought I must tell you this, because it's really, it's something, it's often you get across these things, if you are aware, you feel how Baba gets people to love him, through channels who were not premeditated. I might have gone there and talked to people and said, Baba is God and all that. People might have shunned me. But that's not the question. If they shun me, they shouldn't shun Baba. So that's what I feel. His story is, you know, I felt so good. And on the duty, I thought they might. You see, they charge goods of art by the kilo, by the pound. So the clay plug is so big, was heavy. And his head is pure ore of wood. And wherever I passed, even in Switzerland, where they used to say, have you got alcohol or something? I said, I've only got this. And the car was full, you know, they almost get scared to look at the things I have in the car, you know, always overpacked, and on top of it, the dog. But they just said, they didn't even look for the passport for the dog. They just said, pass. And so you see, nobody who shouldn't touch Baba, or nobody would take it away and say, you have to pay that and that much because I wouldn't have added too much money anymore. But still, you know, and then when I came to Arsenio, Nuriel rang up and I said, I spoke German, so they couldn't understand. Can't I tell him, because I can't keep my mouth, and I can't leave Baba in the bag. I must take him out. He mustn't be suffocated like this. And then Muria said, you can tell that they have ordered for them, for themselves, not as a gift. But then you see, I couldn't keep my mouth, because I was saying, Julie was like, we put it there, and she said, oh, let's leave it out till the last moment before you leave. So when you came back, so we had Baba's mask there. And the nicest drawing he gave me, the biggest one, I gave to Arsenio. But then I said, don't give away. Pretend that you had thought it was from Maria. Say you felt you would want it, but you see, they felt so happy. And they were some other wanted to give toys for the children. But what is, they have very great expense with the air to send the thing. So that really covers everybody. And it's something, and the Baba's love is in this head, you can see. So then we had it on from when I came to Geneva, Versa, till I left. And then I said, yes, I showed. And I didn't say no, because I didn't want to lie. But this past Sunday, they went to see Nuria, and Nuria gave it to them. But see, Nuria, it was being kind. And she said, if others don't participate, never mind, we pay for it. You know, they both are, they don't talk much, but they are very loving. For Baba, real love. So then, you see, and the man said the plaster, which he was first getting into Baba, he gave us a present to Nuria. So now he's doing more. And I'm sure if I can get this Spanish, I will send it before I go so he can study it, and then he can ask questions. So you see, if you have to come to Baba, if you are in a remote village, you will have the chance.
Thank you.
Too much.
Yeah, it's
not when what we are seeing is that this is how you can get. We were talking this morning at breakfast how, apart from everything, the silent giving of Baba, look at the silent suffering. Baba suffering is silent for us. This not talking, even if you take that. Side of his silence, where he's not talking. And yet, everything was done. He traveled over the world, he gathered all his souls during that silent thing. And not only the work of the whole, universal work, all for the world, for all the lovers, for all the disciples, even tiniest little domestic details, everything. Father's talking, an arrangement for a chariot or a journey. Whatever plans he had, he would have it executed. Not only that, but he would see to every minor detail. He comes down to that level of completion, to the point where he even assumes attributes which we understand and reach out to him. For instance, how often we have said to him, don't worry about it. Everything will be all right. It will not say. So if the role of doing that, how far it was working through that too? Because we were then learning, we were reaching out to we were in the role of helpers, comforters, all these opportunities of being with him. The Baba would say, so-and-so was to arrive at 11:30, but he hasn't come. Baba, he'll come. Don't worry, he'll be here. But Baba will go on, as it were, worrying, but it's only 5 minutes left, he hasn't come. But it's 10 minutes after he hasn't come, till you really feel, and I wish that man came. So, but you see how Baba plays the role, plays the part. We don't play it, in the sense that, like when Baba comes down into the muck of illusion, when he puts his hand in it to draw us out of it, he has gloves on. His divinity is the glove, so it doesn't touch him. He's not touched or affected by the filth or anything, or by the falsity. He puts his hand in, but when he takes the glove off, that means when he drops his body, that's it. But we have no gloves. So for us to be in there, he gets down into the filth to pull us out. So he would be on a level with us and worry with us to get rid of our nature of worrying, even if it's about anything that we think is worth worrying. Because as he says, nothing is worth worrying except how much are we loving him? How much are we pleasing him? He knows that worry we must, that human nature is to worry. And without worry, we'd probably break up. So he says, first of all, he says, don't worry. And then he adds, but if you must worry, then worry how to love me more. But if this is not a lifetime work, one lifetime is not enough. 40 years, 50 years, what is it? Even if it's a step towards him. But when there is no thought even of the step, there is no thought of any return, there is no thought of reward, there is no thought of receiving anything, when the thought is simply to be allowed to be with him, to try in our own way, but to please him. Every time when that pleasing was successful, and we see our reward with a smile from him, is saying, you've made me happy. When it's only that, then that's enough. But if you have expectation of pleasing him because he is the rich uncle who will leave you the treasure he has, or if you are willing to pay a price for purchasing what he has, you're out of luck. The very nature of the thing he gives is different. That is why he loved the master. So, because it was their love. It was a love for God. The longing was from love. It was not a bargain. It was not a calculated thing. It's just because you cannot help it. You cannot do anything else but love. You cannot light the moth. Does the moth think when it flutters itself around the candle and burns itself, the wings, it wants to give of it? It's not here to receive, but to give. And even if it's to the point of longing to do that, that's enough. Just longing to do something for him, even when we have not the capacity to do it, that longing is the seed. Because then he takes over. He helps, and any seed, when it is the longing for him, must be fertile. It's always on a fertile land, because it's for the real. So then he takes over and he helps. But we measure our efforts, we measure everything by the years and by one lifetime. It's much bigger than that.
His ocean has no bounds. But once you have let it into his hand, put your hand in his hand, then that's why he tells us. He tells us not as a doctor giving advice or a mother giving comfort. When he says, don't worry, he's telling us because it's a fact. There is no need to worry. Just as we worry in our dreams, but we can't help it. Even I who say that doesn't mean I can do it. In fact, I do worry even in my dreams. I worry terribly, and then I'm so relieved when I wake up. I one day looked in the mirror in my dream, and I saw that I had a mustache. And I was terribly worried. I said, my goodness, this is terrible. I have to shave every day. And even then, they'll know that I've shaved. I mean, you can't really hide it. And when I woke up, I was so relieved. But immediately, see, my thought was, see, just as Baba says, oh, this is a dream, and we cannot accept that. I know from my experience that what I was worrying, I wasted some beautiful, juicy worry over something that didn't exist. And it was a dream.
Mm. But the story of the dog at Baba's feet when he's sleeping.
Yes. But you all have heard the story about Peter, the Cocker Spaniel. You see, one of Baba's pets was Peter, the Cocker Spaniel, that we had for 12 years. 13. Anyway, he was second to Mara's dog. His name was Mastan, a Tibetan master, but this is a Cocker Spaniel. He's traveled with Baba and us. We got him from Mussoorie, a hill station near Dehradun in the north. And it's an interesting story, if you like, how we got him. Would you like that? He belonged to a couple of English women, sisters. They were both sisters to each other. Their bungalow was on the way up the hill where our bungalow was in Mussoorie, where we stayed for a month or two. So as we used to go for long walks with Baba, and they would see Baba and us as we climbed the hill back to our own place, because their cottage was on the way up to our cottage. And so we would smile at them, and they would smile back, and you know, just over the gate friendship. And we learned that she, that is Mrs. Cooper, her name was L.O. Cooper, and she said that the Indian girls, not being able to pronounce L, they would say yellow. So she said, they call me Yellow Cooper, and I'm anything but yellow. So, in English, you laugh. And her older sister, who had this Cocker Spaniel pair, and the pair had just had a litter, she so loved her pets, she so loved dogs, that she wouldn't leave Mussoorie, which had a very cold climate, to go to a warmer climate in winter, because who would look after them? You know, she wouldn't part from them. And she had a bit of arthritis and things. But this younger one, this who was old anyway, Miss Yellow Cooper. So, and she would quietly see Baba. And we were not telling about Baba. In those days, that's not what Baba wanted. It might even disturb Baba's privacy. So we did. So anyway, one day the talk came up, would you like, there's a puppy. Mara must have asked how are the pets and all. And that Cocker Spaniel pair had a litter, and all were given away except one, because he was very special somehow to his mistress, and she wanted to give him to a very special home. So Mara said, now, we're going down. At that time, only us women were going out for a walk. And she said, just let's go in and look, Mani. I said, no, Mara, no. You know what happens when we look at a puppy? We come back with it. I mean, unless you really want a puppy, we better not go. No, all I want to do is look at it. I said, I know exactly what happens when you look at it. Sure enough, that's what happened. So we came back with Peter, climbing up the hill with him. He was 3 months, very wise dog, the wisest we've seen, also very mischievous and all. So to digress and to finish the little story that I know of Mrs. Cooper, Yellow Cooper, after that, when we came down to Dehradun, for a long time I kept writing to the mistress, sending pictures of Peter, telling her how happy Peter was and all that sort of thing. But we were, after Mussoorie, we were down in Dehradun, and we were seated in the hall one afternoon. I was reading out, and we were all seated around, And suddenly, a lady walks in. And I said, oh, I couldn't believe it. She was Mrs. Ella Cooper. Formerly, she used to work in a very big hotel in Agra. And she told us that, you know, she was so proud because personalities would come to the hotel. So she'd met many of the famous personalities, like the Aga Khan, that had been to her hotel where she was linen keeper, where she had a job with board and lodging. So she said she met the Aga Khan and Errol Flynn, the actor, and some other names. And she said, and now Meher Baba. So she'd met even Meher Baba. So that's how it seemed her understanding was, that here, I mean, she accepted him as a really great personality. But when she walked in that day into the sitting room where there was just Baba and us women sitting around, I was a bit surprised. She walked straight in and she greets us with nods, and she goes straight to Baba and puts out her hand, you know, sort of how do you do kind of thing. And Baba very solemnly gives his hand and shakes her hand and smiles and tells her to sit down. And I said, oh dear, what's happened? I mean, how did this happen? So we're sitting around, and she talked for a while, just in a little talk like we would make in conversation. And then she said, oh, now I must be going. And we said, yes. And Baba smiled back so lovingly. And then she came. As she was leaving, at parting also she put out her hand. Baba had stood up then. And she put out her hand, and Baba put out his hand for the handshake, but she didn't let go of his hand. She took his hand, pulled it onto her head, and put it on her head like that and said, bless me, Baba. Baba was stunned. I mean, she hadn't given any indication that she had any recognition or understanding of Baba beyond his being a personality. So she didn't let go of her hand. She just pulled it and put it on her head and said, bless me, Baba. And Baba said, yes. And he pressed his hand on the top of her head like that. Mm. And a few months after that, she died. Mm. So she really was smart. She really was smart. So then we brought Peter. There's so many stories of Peter and the mare's horse, Sheba, and along with them, all kinds of things. But he was a great one and a real companion too. He was part of the family. Now, when we were in Mehrazad, just like when we were in Satara, the moment Baba would walk out of the cottage to go to the men's house, the men are always a little distance away from where the women's houses were. So he would walk over. Of course, Peter would be the first, romping, going for a walk, going with Baba. He was always there. So same way when he was in Mehrazad, Peter would come along with Baba when he came from the men's quarters, from the women's quarters, up to the Mandali Hall. So Peter would be coming along. Now, Peter had a habit of snoring just like a human being. And it was quite disconcerting sometimes, because when we would be in Baba's room and I would be reading out Tolkien's trilogy or a Woodhouse or a Rex Stout or an Agatha Christie to Baba in the room, I suddenly one day heard snoring. And I said, my God, who could it be? While I continued to read, I thought, Naja? And I looked at her, but no, she wasn't so asleep. Who would be daring to sleep and snore with Baba right before us? And suddenly I realized the snoring was coming right on under my chair. So while reading, I bent down and found Peter flat and just snoring. It's funny how when you're reading sometime, you're not listening to yourself. I've done that. I would come to a part where everybody would laugh. And I said, what happened? What happened? What happened? And they said, well, you should know you're reading. I said, but I wasn't listening. Or when it came to an exciting part, they said, oh. I said, who did it? So anyway, so Peter would come along with Baba when he came to the Mandali Hall. And he would lay himself down here before Baba's feet. So that sometimes when Eris had to show Baba a letter after reading during the correspondence reading, or whatever, or Baba had to give something, it would have to be leaned over Peter, lying prone before Baba. Now, at the door here of the Mandali Hall, there used to be two bells, one bigger bell and one smaller bell, so that if Eric rang the bigger bell, it meant Baba wanted Gohar. If he rang the little bell, it meant Baba wanted money. Now, my office is near us. I just sit at that little office here by the table, type the family letters and watch the birds and the chameleons. In fact, there were two chameleons on two trees, and I realized they had their own territory. And, you know, they were very possessive of their territory. So when the little one would come down, Ferdinand, the big fat one, would keep an eye on that little thing. And the moment he came down for something, an ant or a cricket, Ferdinand would just, you know, go red in the face and go like this and rush down. And that little one would just grab the cricket and, Mama! Run right onto his tree just in time before Ferdinand could catch it, you know. And things like that. It was great fun. Little Bicky would come and have a bath in the bird bath. So it was nice having an office with no walls. And I was very conscious of the fact, which is why now I go to the office with four walls and two tube lights blaring and glaring right over my head, you know. You can't escape anything. You got to make up for some time. Anyway, at that time I was enjoying myself. So one morning, what happened was the little bell rang. So I dropped the carbon paper I was putting in the typewriter and rushed over. And when I came, Aunt Baba said, he looked at me and said, look at that. Just look at that. And what I was looking at was Peter, prone like that, and snoring, fast asleep and snoring. And I said, yes, Baba. See that? I said, Baba, shall I take him away? It is disturbing. Let the bugger be. So I went away. It was fun. And continued my typing. 2 days later, again when the bell rang for me, when I came, it was the same scene. Here Baba sitting in the chair, and there Peter sprawled at his feet. And he wasn't snoring this time. He was dreaming. And anyway, whenever Peter was excited and chasing something, he'd make a lot of sound. So here he was lying flat, his paws moving so fast, you know, like that. And with a frown of concentration on his face, which made his... So Baba said, look at him. So again, he said, yes. And Baba said something, which I thought over only afterwards. He said, look at him. He's dreaming, and he thinks he's being chased by wolves. Or he's running over. You see, the signs he made was like, he thinks he's chasing or being chased by some wild animal that is going over the mountains, across rivers, through deserts, all this that he said. And yet, he's sound, safe and sound at my feet. He's not doing any of these things. While he thinks he's doing all that, he's safe and sound at my feet. Yes, Baba, yes. When I went back, I said, now that is one of what I called Baba's, the simple sermons. When Baba would make you aware through a very simple illustration of the profound depth of what he was giving. And I said, exactly. We think we're doing so much, we're going through so much, oh, we can't stand it anymore, we can't. And yet then he tells us, don't worry, because he knows that this is only dreaming. That we are safe and sound at his feet. I have a picture on the veranda in that office where Peter has these two chipmunks going all over him. And Mary kept telling me, take a picture. I said, what's it going to take in a picture? I got only a little box camera. Nothing comes out anywhere. And he's so black. What's going to come out? No, take a picture. So one day I took. And I'm so glad I did. The expression on his face... He used to chase squirrels. So one day in Satara, when we heard some creature crying on the roof, and we were disturbed, our sleep was disturbed. What is it up on the roof? There's some helpless creature, something needing help. Early in the morning, we put a ladder and we went up, and there were three little chipmunk babies, and by themselves, tiny things, eyes had been closed, looks like, you know, like little rat babies. And so we brought them down, and one died, but the two were surviving pretty well. We used to make a wick out of cotton wool and dip it in a saucer of milk. And then it's like a nipple, like the mother's nipple they feel. See it? So, and they said, oh dear, what shall we do? How to keep them away from Peter? Because Peter is a squirrel chaser. What to do? But it turned out completely opposite. Peter took such a maternal view of these little things. He was so passionately fond of them. He used to quiver just to look at them. He would sit before them and tremble. Just tremble. And he wanted, just to show the sympathy and how much he related with them, he wanted to eat what they ate. But he didn't like what they ate. He took a bit of banana in his mouth and, you know, he was trying to wash it out for days. So then we would put the... one other thing that Peter had a passion for was for walks. But he wouldn't go for walks. We were three of us pulling him to go for walks. But he wanted to go back to the squirrels, to the chipmunks. So we let him be what... as he was. So he'd sit before this box, which had these squirrels. Now they're growing. And while we were dining in the dining room, we left the squirrels in the care of Peter. And Peter would sit with that frown, a terrible frown, because he can't put his ears up, you see. So he has frowned. And he looks at them. And they would come out of the box as they grew. And they would be playing. And it was a hard time for him to keep an eye on both the chipmunks. Yeah, that. So look, is it to look here? Is it to look here? So when one of them would cross the threshold to go out of the room, Peter would go and pick that chipmunk gently in his mouth and put him back in the box. Yes, that's the picture. And you know, these chipmunks were naughty. They would part his hair and pull it tough. And he would wince, but he wouldn't hurt them. He wouldn't scold them. Sometimes when they got under his stomach, he would be in the most extraordinary position trying to avoid crushing them. You'd suddenly go and find Peter sitting like this or like this. And say, what's the matter with him? You'd find that this chipmunk trying to... look at that expression, see?
What happened to the chipmunk?
Oh, then the chipmunks grew up. And as usual, we would free the pets that we took in as invalids or looking after. Then we would free the pets, like Baba freed the parrots. Another parrot story. Yeah. So anyway, we put the chipmunks in a basket and went for a long walk, but we didn't take Peter. And we went to this enormous banyan tree where there would be a lot of berries and a lot of other chipmunks, and we... Let them go there. And chup! They did have flew straight up the bark as if they belonged there. They were so happy. But for 3 days, poor Peter moped. And we tried to make harp, and we tried to take him for walks. We weren't quite sure whether we should have let him see. But if we had, he may have wanted to go back there. So... Maybe there are... chipmunk psychologists in America. I know there are dog psychologists. I used to laugh about that, but now I think it's not a bad idea. We've had some queer dogs in Babadabra. You know, very, very much their own people, and sometimes you just don't know the answer.
Who chose the name Peter?
Well, he was named Peter.
Oh,
when we got them. His name was Peter.
Nice day.
Where did he sleep at night?
Oh, with us in the house?
No.
And later, where did he sleep, Ron? He had a basket for a long time. And where he traveled with us on the trains and the bus. He just had a grand time.
Honey?
Huh? Yes. But, of course, when he was quite grown up, like the other dogs sleep in that... So motherly he looks, doesn't he?
Oh,
so proud, as if he created them. Now, look at that.
Did Baba see that picture?
Oh, yes.
Did he enjoy it?
Oh, yeah.
Well, money, now it's time that we should switch over from Peter to Baba.
Yes. Every day there is. The latest one this weekend was, Jimmy Mystery comes to me and says, look, he says, the accounts of the Mad Hatter books, which he does. He runs the Mad Hatter books in the trust office. You've seen it. Baba books. They said, there's a 50 rupees that just won't balance. It just, I can't put into anything. We spent days on this, but here's this 50 rupees that I don't know what to do with. You please. He handed it to me. I said, what am I going to do with it?